put on our PJs, build a blanket fort. Let's go inside, get cozy, comfortable. It's not a coincidence, it's a metaphor about how we come together and build our world. And when the convo ends, we break it down and begin again. Sit down, tune in, crank it. It's time to bring your own blanket. Blanket Ninjas.
Hello there, Janon here. I want to tell you guys two things real quick before the episode begins. First, this is a two-part episode. So if you're listening to the first part, know that there is more after the episode ends. And if you're listening to the second part and you have not yet listened to the first part, I highly recommend going back and listening to it. Although you don't have to. I can't tell you what to do. The second thing I want to tell you guys is that there are various ways to interact with us. One of them being becoming a patron via patreon.com/byoblanket. Again, that is patreon.com/byoblanket. Basically, you commit to giving us a certain amount of money per month, from as low as $1 up to like $40 a month, and you get different rewards for each tier that you sign up for. And I mean, they're like cool little things, like we do stickers, we're gonna do t-shirts, we'll do like little ninja gifts. Maybe we'll send you guys ninja stars at some point, because our patrons are known as Blanket Ninjas. Anyway, another cool thing about being a patron is we often ask for some content advice or submitted questions from our patrons. And on this episode, we have patron-only submitted questions. So if you want to get in on that, again, go to that website I mentioned earlier. And other than that, there are more ways to be involved in our community without necessarily having to show support via money. That would be following us on all of our social media channels, on Instagram in particular, and also reviewing us on iTunes. That's it, just putting up a review. I hope it would be a good one, though you can totally be honest. And then just telling people about us, like being like, hey, listen to this podcast, it's really good. That would help out a lot, because we do this for you, not really for us, even though it is very fun. Anyway, enjoy the episode. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to BYO Blanket, a podcast where we get cozy and discuss interesting topics to uplift, inspire, and contribute, all inside a blanket fort. I'm Janon.
And I am Maria. Welcome to our podcast. We are sitting here with two freaking amazing guests. Joe and Chris.
Joe Down, Chris Herber.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Chris. What do you do? How old you are? And something, I don't know.
An interesting, interesting. An interesting fact about yourself that the general population might not know.
All right. Well, I just turned 32, so I'm a Gemini. Gemini starseed. I am a real estate agent. For the greater Houston area. So if you have any real estate needs,
don't hesitate
to give me a call. And something the public doesn't know about me is I used to be a professional hip hop dancer.
What?
Yeah. What?
By professional, what do you mean?
Well, we did a few shows. We did a few paid gigs, stuff like that. I didn't go as far as some of my friends did. My friends ended up opening up their own studios, and I would comparing me to them now, I'm definitely an amateur compared to them, but at the time, we were pretty pro.
Wow. That's so cool. Yeah. Legit.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Wow.
You guys are friends.
Yeah. Did you ever watch, So You Dance.
America's Got Talent?
America's Best Dance Crew.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, my friends won season 6 and second place on season 2. So Real
Whoa.
Crew and IME Crew.
Whoa.
Dang. That is so... Wow, that is an interesting fact.
All right, well, you're going to be teaching me how to dance.
I know.
By the way, now that I know that.
All right.
We'll have maybe a video on social media of a dance class.
We're going to get some
shots of you dancing before we head out and put on Instagram.
Definitely.
Oh, man. Gotta lube up these rusty hips.
That's what she said.
On that note, Joe Down, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm 34, and I'm turning 35 really soon.
Dang, I thought you were younger than
August 8th.
Okay.
I'm an MBO,
so. Cool.
Yeah, and I'm a yoga teacher here in Houston. And something things that people might not know about me, I keep a dream journal, and I've been keeping a dream journal for like the last 8 years.
Whoa.
Pretty consistent, so I have lots of dreams written down. And I look at them, I love them. Like I feel like they're stories being told to me from like a source that I that loves me.
That's awesome.
So can I tell you, so I started doing a dream journal, and I was not as, I don't want to say, well, what's the word?
Consistent?
Yeah, definitely not consistent. So, but something that I really want to do and want to get into is like start keep writing those and do it maybe for a year or maybe longer, right? And then actually write short stories based on that and publish that as well.
That's exactly what I've done.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I haven't caught to publishing, but I'm going to commit again right here on air to publishing. I've written and completed a short journal or of sorts of short stories. It's a book. But it's like 25 pages, but and we're going to publish it on, and I've completed it with a couple of my friends as well, Chantel King and then Michelle Kaiwe, and I all wrote each our own portion. I hope that they don't mind. I'm sure they won't, because we're about to go public with this anyway.
Yeah.
So our own portion of this collective volume, and we're going to each publish them as our own book on Amazon KDP, and soon there'll be an announcement and a party or a tea, maybe like a blanket party, who knows?
You know?
Yeah. So but they are like very meaningful stories for me from my dream. So I go back to the most meaningful ones and kind of create characters out of them and extrapolate a little bit from what happens.
Wow.
And
I have terrifying dreams, and so I don't write mine. Well, I sometimes write them down. Though I don't really want to know those stories in my waking life, so I just go to therapy.
That works.
So that seems very interesting to someone
that
who doesn't have like cool dreams.
Yeah, well, I remember my dreams. They're usually very detailed, and I remember like full conversations that happened in my dream.
Yeah.
I remember so many details and so much. Like where Janan is like, oh my god, just stop telling me about this dream. Like 30 minutes after I started telling her.
Well, I'll make coffee, make breakfast, eat breakfast, and she's still not done
That's
telling
incredible.
Me her dream.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Then
I can hardly
back on them.
So that's a gift.
Well, speaking of sleeping in blankets, how did you guys like building blanket fort as grown men?
Definitely a first for my adulthood.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you did as a kid?
Kind of brought me back. What was interesting is I didn't know that other people were also building blanket forts in the world. I thought we stumbled upon something new and cool when me and my sister were doing it. So it's like there's this collective consciousness going on with blanket forts.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty cozy in here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's actually not as hot as usual.
I made sure I included a window this time.
There's some windows.
And I will just say that I brought not only my own blanket, but I brought my own candle.
Oh, yeah.
I brought a candle in, like, ambiance. Because
I love it.
We have a straight-up fire hazard in the blanket fort now.
Because
we
live life on
this
the edge.
This bulb and this lamp is one of those, like, low, like, watt
low
bulbs
wattage.
Or whatever that doesn't actually, like, you can still touch it. So,
yeah.
So that's safe.
Yeah, so that's
safe.
And adding fire in here is fine.
That's fine.
I'm not worried about
it. Makes it more interesting.
It's fine.
Yeah. We're watching it.
Yeah. So you guys, today's episode, we are discussing, I guess as a broad subject, we'll go ahead and say like physics.
Space. And
the universe.
Exactly. So tell us, one of you guys, I don't know how you guys said on this topic, but we started talking and these were so adamant about doing this, which I'm going to speak for myself and say that this is so freaking cool, and I'm really excited to talk about this. But tell us, why did you pick this topic?
I mean, I the same kind of, like, love connection that I feel to my dreams, like, I feel that to the stars and to the sky. Like, when you look up and look out into the you know, into the mystery of what this all is, it tends to, I think, affect people in a similar type of profound, universal way as, like, we all built blanket forts when we were little and thought we were the first person to, like, create this. Or be,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's just there's something invoking about the whole conversation and topic of what reality is.
Mm. For me, I guess I had a pretty profound spiritual experience back in 2013. And ever since that day, I've kind of been noticing how things are more connected. And then as my awareness got, you know, kept on expanding, you know, outside the earth, it's like, oh, we're even connected to what's outside. And it's actually helped my life here on earth in a very good way, a very positive way.
Mm.
So, and I know Joe and I, we just had a conversation randomly one day when we were hanging out, and it's like we both could kind of go toe-to-toe with the subject. So
yeah, that's why I thought of Chris.
Yeah.
No, it's really cool. Yeah, yeah, I here, I'll let you say something about this, because I know you also.
I'm a total nerd for this topic, and though in the past like year or so I haven't dedicated a lot of my brain time to like researching outer space like I used to. Like I've got a bunch of books on my bookshelf all about like metaphysics and hyperspace and I'm not a mathematician by trade. Like I don't know all those cool crazy equations, though I freaking love math, and I feel like math is really like what describes this reality we live in, from the tiniest little like particle all the way up to the most giant thing in the universe. It's just
more than just described. I mean, potentially,
I mean, it is
right at the highest levels of like the infinitely small.
Yeah,
we can't really distinguish what reality is from the like pure data.
Yeah, yeah, and it blows my mind in a way that, like you said, Chris, it allows me to feel this connectedness that I didn't have before, because I have this like huge broad perspective on like how, even though they're on one side of reality, my perception sees things as separate, but on a more like even real sense, I can see how it's actually, there's like no separation at all. And that comes from like studying things like stars and movement and black holes and time and so
mechanics.
I'm nerding out pretty hard on this episode. Thank you guys so much for choosing this topic.
Thank you for choosing us.
Well, yeah,
I think you described kind of where I'm at perfectly too. It's like I'm not a mathematician. I haven't studied as avidly as I used to, but you know, it's still, that interest is still there. And yeah.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely my qualification for speaking on this topic is like none, but,
there's no PhDs
but my heart qualifies me.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I love the paradox of like a hard science that's, you know, almost science is almost perceived as like black and white, right? It's either yes or no. And it's just so like, yeah, it's just,
there's not warmth to it usually.
No, it's a very hard science, and yet it describes in a very like how you guys said it, right? Explains like consciousness and spirituality, which is arguably the complete opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this paradox that happens that is just so beautiful.
Like I feel like you can, like one cannot talk about the inner workings of physics without also talking about philosophy. Like, they really go hand in hand with one another. And the cool thing that I also noticed was most, like, master philosophers and master physicists, even if they start out completely, like, atheists, they end up, like, going, like, agnostic or theistic in some way, because they're just like, well, what other explanation could there possibly be? Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, nice. So you guys brought us a bunch of topics of interest. I think it's written there on your...
Yes.
Yeah, we have it on
the book. We have a lot of little cool science-y papers laying around the blanket fort.
Mm-hmm.
We all should be in lab coats. That would have been cool.
Oh, we should have done that.
Yeah. Take us through one topic that really just lights your fire.
Yeah, I mean, since we're talking about consciousness and that connection between science and like the spiritual, or science and the profound... There's an experiment. One of the things, I was like YouTube surfing one day, and I came across, I source from PBS Spacetime, and then there's like a New Scientist. I have several sources online I'll read, and I came across the double slit experiment.
Oh, it's so interesting.
Which is, it's just incredible. So what happens in the double slit experiment, for context, is the scientists are shooting photons through two slits, and what you would expect to occur on the other side of that is just two beams of light to be cast upon the receiving wall, or the photoreceptive wall that's behind the slits. But what actually ends up happening is, someone want to fill it in?
Creates an interference pattern like a wave.
Yeah, it creates this like mysterious pattern of and what it is that it's the photons are interacting with each other, or even if you just shoot one through, it interacts with itself and it makes these waves. And much like waves, there's points where the waves are higher and lower, and where they're going to be higher, it's going to create this pattern on the wall. Okay, so no big deal. Interference pattern, that's pretty cool, but just by itself, right? But just by itself. But then the thing that gets really crazy is that if you put an instrument at the slits to determine which of the two slits it went through, even if you just put an instrument at one of the two slits to determine which of the two it went through, the pattern suddenly disappears. Like that wave pattern goes away, because you are now observing the photon, and the photon now no longer acts like a wave.
It acts like a particle.
It acts like a particle.
Like matter.
Yeah.
Right. And
it's so cool. It's so cool.
It's like it does know that it's being observed.
Yeah.
The photon is aware of if it's being observed. And what gets even crazier, because scientists are like, we're going to trick this thing into figuring out what it is.
I love that part.
So they make like this, I think the best way to describe it is like a photon maze. That's totally just butchering it. But they make this special maze for the photons. And what they do is they entangle two photons, and they send, entanglement. It's like this magical twin photons.
Correlation of photons.
But quantum entanglement is its own topic. Particles can be connected, but they're these beautiful twin particles that they like know what each other is doing. And so they
Even from across the universe, they'll know what the other one is doing.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
They send them through the slit, and if you send one of them to the left and to the maze on the left and the other one to the right, if there's no detectors, then they'll both make patterns, beautiful wave patterns. But if there's a detector on just one side, the other one will do like an accordance. So if one of them gets seen by the detector,
turns into a particle or becomes a particle.
Yeah, it becomes a particle or appears as a particle.
Yeah.
The other one appears as a particle.
Even though it's not being quote unquote looked at.
Well, what's even crazier is if you send one to the left and it gets seen by the observer, and that. But the other one in the past has already struck the photon receiver. So the other one, like on the one on the right, goes to the maze and it strikes first and doesn't get detected. But the one on the left goes through the maze, and the maze is much longer and it gets detected. They communicate across time. So the one on the left will send a message through into the past and tell the other photon to change, like from a wave to a particle. Hey, we got observed, or hey, we didn't get observed. Into the past, like
FYI.
Yeah, I know. And then it gets even crazier, because then they allow this crazy thing where the second photon can go to this maze, and if you send it to a maze and it gets confused, and you confuse it, even if it gets detected, but you can't tell because of this mirror maze. They make like basically a mirror house for these photons to go through. So if you send them through the mirror maze and it gets detected, like it's like, hey, become a particle. But if it gets detected and then it's allowed to keep traveling and go through this mirror house maze, it's like, hey, we're good now. We went through the mirror house maze and they don't know which slit we went through, so we can go back to being a waveform.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it knows if it's getting detected, and it knows if it goes through if it knows if it's like in this mirror house, you can't tell which slit it came through. So This is super trippy.
Yeah.
One of the, because you guys, you know, sent us an email and said that this is something that you guys wanted to discuss, and I started looking it up, and I spent a good 6 hours just reading about this, because, again, I was like, yeah, no, I know what the experiment is, and I was like, you know, really basic, behaves like a particle, behaves like a wave, whether it's observed or not, you know, and I started actually reading into it, and, you know, I came across all of that, and it just completely blew my mind. There's one interpretation that I saw, which is called the mini world interpretation.
Mini world? M-A-N-Y?
Yes, like mini, like multiple.
I thought you meant like tiny world.
No. Okay, with mini. Multiple. Yes, and the really cool thing about this, and this is because I also really like science fiction and all of those really cool, like we were saying before, right? Like Battlestar Galactica and just stuff like that on TV. I found that entertaining. It's that interpretation is saying that it is very plausible and scientifically, or will eventually, I guess, be scientifically proven that there are multiple parallel universes. Because one of the explanations could be that basically when there's a particle and it's got the different choices, whether to go through left or right or whatever, what ends up actually happening is they're going through every single conceivable path until it gets detected, which without the observer, it's when it hits the wall, right? And that's when it decides whether it goes into here and forms the different patterns. And when it's observed, then it behaves like matter because there's one
universe in which someone is observing.
Exactly.
Wow.
Right. Exactly.
It's almost like,
isn't that crazy?
It's almost like the observer is entangled with the experiment too.
And you know what it made me think of?
What?
You know, and we've said this on multiple episodes, right? We bring up the idea of your words create your world in that concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in like, what it got me thinking is like, will it eventually be able to be like physically, scientifically proven that your words actually do create your future for that particular reason?
Whoa.
Isn't that?
I think, Chris, you had like an interesting perspective on this one.
Is it the fourth dimensional beings?
No, not that. you're at the Zen Center. One of the teachers had brought up a perspective on the double slit, and you shared it with me.
Okay, let me see if I can remember that. Well, basically, there's this book called the Kybalion. Have y'all heard of it?
Mm-mm.
So in this book, it's an ancient book. There is a list of laws that are inherent in creation. And these laws are very easily observed. So, you know, if you take a look at them, you know, you can kind of go through the list and see them for yourself. But one of them is called the Law of Correspondence. And it basically says that the universe is self-similar. It's similar on every level, right? So kind of like what Maria was saying, you know, this double slit experiment, it shows a wave collapsing because an observer. So in the same way, we ourselves are like these waves of infinite potential. And it's only when we really look into ourselves or someone else looks at us, you know, like let's say a boss or something looking over your shoulder, then you start to focus in and do what you intend to do.
Oh.
You know?
So yeah, it like brings the matter to attention. It's like, oh, like someone's watching me now. I need to get my gear into shape.
And gear into shape, exactly.
Gear into shape, shape into gear. Yeah. I don't remember how the phrase
is. So matter can be very mischievous then.
Exactly. Well, they say in the Buddhist and Hindu traditions, it's all illusion. Creation itself is technically illusion. What's before that is just pure consciousness.
Yeah.
So does consciousness really precede matter?
Yeah.
Or like, you know, most of the scientific community, they say matter creates consciousness. But I personally believe it's the other way.
Yeah,
well,
same.
In this experiment, I mean, the interesting little factoid is that it's not just a human observer. Actually, it's not a human observer that collapses it. It's a detector. And it would happen even if there was no human involved. So it's or it could be anything like a house plant that would receive like a photon, anything that could like receive a photon, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's showing that almost maybe there's a form of consciousness created with a detector or a house plant.
Well, but, I mean, then what stops like the wall that you know what I'm saying? Like
the black wall, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Then isn't any particle an observer at that point?
That's true. That's a good question. Good question.
Because then, like, where's the line at, like, what's alive and what's not alive?
Right.
Like, that, it comes down to that, too, for me. Because, really, electrons are moving around. How are they not considered alive? You know what I mean? But they're in everything. So then what stops, like, you know, my freaking wood floor underneath me from being, like, a sort of being?
What stops Mars from being alive or, quote, unquote, having life?
Maybe it's how that consciousness is gathered, or or you as a human, you have a neurochemical processing system that's able to receive like the consciousness of your if for instance a single atom has a form of consciousness, but it is very unorganized, but a brain may be able to organize that consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at us and animals, like, there are some very low brain activity kind of animals who are almost like plants in the way that they act, and then there are other very intelligent animals just like us. So I kind of get lost in that world of, like, okay, well, then at one point, do fish have, like, a consciousness that's akin to mine, or is it, like, more like a rock's consciousness, you know what I mean?
I personally would say everything does have an awareness, but it's different on every level. For example, you know, a human's consciousness, we're very emotional. We have ups and downs. We're into something, then we're not into something. We're hot and cold. But you look at the sun, all it's concerned about is burning as brightly and shining as brightly as it possibly can till it can't no more.
Yeah.
You know?
And then
it's giving 100% all the time.
Do you guys believe that humans are special?
Oh, from other forms of life?
Yeah.
I think what do you mean by special?
Just, I mean, we have this innate sense, like the ego self is like, yeah, we're different. We're like the best
right,
thing that's ever
right.
been made. Like the universe revolves around us. You know what I mean? And then there's another way of looking at where that's not true. And different people have different opinions, so.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. It's the ego that makes us different, you know. And ego, you know, it gets a bad rap, and it is probably, you know, it is the source of many of our mistakes and faults, but that's what makes us human, too.
You know? It's being able to have a sense of, like, self.
Because,
like, what if, for example, a fish, I don't know what fish think, but what if the fish are actually so elevated in their consciousness that they don't feel themselves as separate than the water and the ocean and the earth and the space.
Yeah, I've often wondered if animals exist when they're not hungry or, you know, whatever, seeking a mate, whatever things animals would do, tired, drinking water. In those in-between places, what do they do? I mean, like, with their brains. And I'm guessing that it has to be something like form of meditation.
Right, because when a cat's just sitting
like
there
right
and staring.
Yeah.
Right, they're just like
just existing and breathing.
They're being,
just like
whereas
pure life. Yeah.
And it causes me to then think like, damn, animals are actually like, they could teach us things on being with and like meditation and accepting what is. Because like, sure, they have the survival instincts that we do, because that's all ego is. It's really just the creature in us that wants to survive, and then we have this complicated society that then like had our ego evolve into being like accepted by society, not just survive.
Right.
And so
right.
I don't,
Instagram.
We got, yeah, Instagram.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And I find that there are some humans who live more like quote animals than humans. You know what I mean? Like very little possessions, just worry about eating and sleeping. And I found that some of them are like happy, like very happy compared to me.
Well, maybe. And that could also be just, you know, the observation or what you're actually labeling it as. Because maybe their definition, actually not maybe, probably, their definition of happiness or the importance of happiness could be completely different.
That's true.
Because for Gabrielle right now, laying on top of our outline, it could just be she's fed, She likes being around us. She's around us. So she can nap happily because she's well fed. She doesn't need to go to the bathroom and she can just be.
And that goes back to episode 2 on our, we did
it
happiness.
Does, yeah.
And it's like, what is happiness really? Because at the end of the day, is it a concept that it's a human made concept? So is it even a thing to consider at all when we're discussing like consciousness? Because a happy animal and an unhappy animal, there's no difference really. Like if we're talking out, if we're not talking about their experience, but rather like their existence,
mm-hmm. Right.
You know?
Mm. I think this connects, like if we're connecting it back to kind of like this bigger picture of space, like one thing that's fascinated me and I know Chris as well, like is this concept of there's millions and millions and millions of stars, millions and millions and millions of galaxies, almost innumerable, and there has to be life out there, like in these.
It makes
right?
sense statistically.
And if you think about it, the type of place that's going to sustain that life, I mean, even what scientists believe is going to be an Earth-like planet. I mean, we're looking for water, probably looking for things like oxygen in
yep.
the environment.
And
then if you start thinking about it more, you're like, well, if it's an Earth-like planet, then whatever processes happened here probably happened there in a similar way. And animals, starting with plants through animals, are going to all have similar evolutionary needs. So there's going to be very similar
yeah.
plants, animals, if not some of the same plants, animals, on these other planets potentially. And that leads all the way up to humans. And
well, it's like, you know, Chris, you're
or
saying
something similar.
You
humanoids.
Didn't, you thought you were the
humanoids,
first kids
Chris's
to
word.
Ever you thought you're the first kids to ever invent blanket forts. And
oh.
then you're like, oh, but it's the collective consciousness. Like
right.
we all like do the same thing as kids without knowing what each other are doing. It could be the same thing, but across freaking galaxies.
Well, using the law of correspondence, like I mentioned earlier, that would be true.
Whoa.
So there's, I was also researching about this. And one of the things that I came across, like multiple theories as to why we haven't found life yet. And there were two that really stood out to me. And one of them says that, you know, space is just so unpredictable, right? To put it lightly.
Right.
And it's very harsh. The environment itself is very mm-hmm. harsh. And so much is happening so fast at different temperatures and all of these things that for everything to come together at the right time under the right circumstances like it did with Earth could be almost like we are the outliers. We are like one in literally
the whole universe.
The universe,
yeah.
right? So that is one theory. And the other one is that sort of goes along with that and takes it a little bit further and says, well, maybe we're just the first. Maybe there are other worlds that have more basic, like almost single cell like, where it's literally just a planet with like single strands of RNA and DNA that have yet to form a single cell organism.
Sure.
Because time is also, like space is huge. Also time
and
is huge.
What percentage of the universe can we observe? I mean,
exactly.
So little, you know,
mm-hmm.
we can see the Milky Way is 100,000 light years across, right?
I think even more. That's
yeah.
a huge number.
Yeah, yeah.
Gigantic.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, in the ballpark of that. And it, I mean, so our radio signals have gone 60 years or however, I guess, don't quote me on that number.
Well,
is it 120? How long have we had radio?
For a while. Let's just say since sometime in the early, late
1800s. Okay.
Yeah.
And this
all
is
right.
all quoted because it's
okay.
been recorded.
That's funny. That's good. That's beautiful. Anyway, our TV signals, is TV 60 years old? Sure, to say
at least.
Something.
At least.
So,
yeah.
anyway, it's not that very, it's like I'm not even out at all. So, I mean, for another civilization to detect us, they're going to have to be pretty close. They're going to have to be
our
neighborhood in the Milky Way, our very close neighbors
mm-hmm.
in the with regard to the size of space.
Yeah.
So do you guys remember the Voyager 1 and the Voyager 2?
Oh, yeah.
The space missions back in the 70s. And
they're
one
still
of them,
happening, right?
Yeah,
yeah
they're
yeah.
still technically happening.
It's
which,
crazy.
I know. And like, but and that goes back to like, you know, if there is life out there, you know, we sent out that golden record that had like, I don't know, like an hour and a half of music and
right.
then some other like explanation in different languages.
Had pictures
and
of
every...
like naked humans.
Yeah, and it should pictures.
Well, it had like their sex organs
the
so we can see
was, yeah.
what how we do things.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it had like instructions as to how to play this like what would have been vinyl really made out of gold, how to play it. They had the record player with it. So, and they had the location based on multiple points in the universe,
oh, yeah.
how they could
quasars.
Find
quasars. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
They still haven't found
it's
it.
It's only a matter
know.
Of space.
I thought you were going to say light years.
No. Yeah. I mean, that take a little detour down the path of time. Time,
oh, yeah.
I feel like, is an equally cool subject as space because there's so those things like space and time have a correlation to them similar
mm-hmm.
to entanglement. One thing I find really fascinating is like time is something that helps us to understand the universe, and though it is not like a permanent thing, like it's very malleable and changeable. You guys know about the atomic clock experiment they did? So an atomic clock is, you probably know it
yeah,
as soon as I start telling
us.
You, it's a clock that keeps rhythm via the pulse of an atom. So that's why it's called an atomic clock. And, the reason why that they use an atomic clock is like, no matter where it goes on Earth, it doesn't run on batteries. It doesn't run on electricity. It runs on an atom. So if you send it anywhere and it'll still run. So they had two identical ones. And they had kept one on Earth, and they sent one up into space and, like, flew it around super duper fast. And then they brought it back down, and the one that went up in space and went around super fast was behind, like, by a lot. So they proved that the faster something goes,
right.
like the faster its velocity is, the slower time goes.
Sure.
And
yeah.
that as you approach the speed of light, time begins to stop. And at the speed of light, which nothing can actually be at except for light itself, time stops. And then another small rabbit hole to jump into from that is photons, like light, you know, they travel at c, speed of light. And they found out through experimenting there's no physical way we can ever catch up to it unless there's some crazy new, like, invention in physics.
Someone who's Ooh. Definitely winning a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, that would be crazy. Because I think maybe this is one of Einstein's thought experiments. Maybe it wasn't Einstein. But imagine a beam of light, pure, like,
oh, yeah.
flying down the road. And you're in a car that has crazy capabilities that can go, like, to the speed of light. That can go almost that fast. So let's say you and the speed of light are, like, at the start line. Someone says, go. And you go 100 miles an hour, and the speed of light goes the speed of light. You'll just, it'll just go really fast, right? Right by you.
Right.
And then if you're at the start line and you say, go, and you go 99% the speed of light, and then the light beam goes the speed of light, it should seem like the light beam goes and just like barely goes
like you're 1%
forward,
behind
right?
It.
From every
but
observer's
from
perspective.
From every
yeah.
observer's perspective, the light
yeah.
beam is constant. So even if you're going 99% speed of light, you will observe it moving away from you at the speed of light. Mm. So there's like no – and that just blows my mind because then photons are of like angelic quality. They're not even like of this universe. Because of the way that it's the only thing in the universe that can act like that. And
that acts as a constant regardless of
regardless
anything.
Of that. And that which, if you did get to that constant, time would stop.
Yeah.
And then potentially reverse and I don't know what else.
Time travel. I don't know.
Yeah, what you're describing is the concept of the fabric of space-time,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, you can look at it like we're living in three dimensions, real simple explanation. We're looking through in there and you can see what shape I'm a human, I'm the shape of a human. but if in four dimensions, what shape would I be? Well, I start off as a baby and then sometime in the future, I'm going to die. So I go from baby all the way to dead Joe. And it's like if you look at it from the outside of time perspective, you step a dimension,
like a fifth dimension.
Well, yeah, you step back a dimension, then you'll see me as a, like a long snake, like traveling around the earth.
What? Wait.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it's
I go to,
it's your timeline.
You're not experiencing the timeline at one point.
You see me, you know, all the places I've traveled, mainly, which is around Houston. But
oh, that reminds me of Donnie Darko a little bit. Y'all watch Donnie Darko, the movie?
I have not seen Donnie Darko. I haven't seen a lot of things.
Oh,
we're going to give you a list.
Spoiler alert, there's a part in Donnie Darko where he can see people's quote-unquote like higher dimensions, and it's expressed in the movie as big things coming out of their chest that will like
it's almost
like he'll see a big
scene,
thing
yeah.
and then like it's someone's future basically
yeah.
so
oh,
highly
go.
Recommend
hey,
Donnie
hey,
Darko
gotta watch this now.
Yeah,
I think this might be a good time for me to bring up my
yeah.
Deadpool analogy.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
so
yes.
Joe and I were in the car the other day. And y'all are familiar with Deadpool?
I'm familiar.
Okay.
I'm
yeah.
familiar.
Are you familiar
I've
with
never
we haven't seen the movie,
seen it,
though.
And
okay.
I'm familiar.
So basically, I'm going to use an analogy with Deadpool to describe actually a few topics that we've already brought up. Life, higher dimensions, and things of that nature. So are you aware of what Deadpool's greatest ability is? His greatest superpower?
Well, it's being silly.
But why is he silly?
There's
a very specific reason why he's silly.
Because he knows the answer to why we're all alive.
Yes, actually.
Are you serious?
In a way. So he is aware that he is a comic book character.
Oh,
so
self-aware.
He's extremely self-aware. Oh. So in the entire Marvel Universe, he is the only character that is aware that he has an artist as a creator. Whereas even the other smart characters like Professor Xavier or things
yeah.
like that, they can't comprehend what he sees, right?
Oh.
So cool.
So check it out. So he's a two-dimensional character aware of a third-dimensional creator.
Mm.
So in the same way, there is probably a fourth-dimensional being that created us, or a higher being,
mm-hmm.
and we are not aware of it, because we can only become aware of it if they allow us to, just like
yep.
the artist allows Deadpool to be aware of
wow.
the artist.
We're going to watch it now.
Yeah. And you, okay, so Miki Okaku, the guy that wrote the book I was showing you guys earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying his name right. Kaku?
Michio Kaku.
There we go.
Yeah.
He has a similar thing that he actually wrote in the intro of that book, that like imagine a koi pond with koi in it, right? And it's very like a small amount of water. So they really only swim in like two dimensions, and they don't see, you know, above them. So they have no idea humans exist. And he was just like, imagine the scientist koi is swimming around, and suddenly a human reaches in and picks him up and takes him out. And he's suddenly experiencing like a three-dimensional world. It's just like, what's happening?
Right.
And then the human drops the koi back in, the scientist koi. And the scientist koi is like, oh my gosh, I have to tell you, there's three dimensions, not just two of them. And the other koi are like, you're fucking
you're
bananas. Like, there's no way. We can't possibly imagine that.
That's yeah. the allegory of the cave, too.
Yes, the cave.
I think that's Plato.
It is Plato. Yeah. The shadows playing across the cave, and that's like all I remember.
Yeah, basically, it's are you familiar with the
yes.
allegory
yeah,
of the
yeah.
cave? So it's for our listeners, it's the story of how if you are chained up in a cave, facing a wall, and there's a fire behind you, and all you see is the silhouette of yourself, of other objects,
mm-hmm.
right? That's all you've ever seen, and then suddenly one day you're broken free from the cave. Not only your chains and turn around and see the fire that's projecting the silhouette, but you also go outside and you see the world and the sun for the first time. The theory, what he was explaining, is that if you come back and tell your fellow captors, I mean your fellow, you know, the
cave members,
the other cave members, what you saw, that the first inclination they'll do is to try to kill you, actually.
Whoa.
So
yeah.
This sounds very Roman.
Yeah.
It sounds very Roman.
Or
and
Greek
so
actually.
on this subject, right, could one argue that sure, maybe there's like, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, an infinite number of dimensions that we're not aware yet, and we probably might never, I don't know. I mean, you
not
know, we may or may
time.
Not ever
yeah.
be aware of. And at the end of that, or maybe this compilation of dimensions is that what God is? Or the idea of? Or at
right.
the end
yeah,
of that?
Yeah, I think it's a great lead yes. into that question. Like, but I think when, like, so extrapolating here, like in this space where you're looking back at the cartoon and you see Deadpool, it's 2D, so you're a 3D observer. Now, if you observe our life in the fabric of space-time, it's this like 4D big blob structure. If you're observing that structure, then you're existing in the fourth dimension. You're like you're aware of four dimensions, but your degree of freedom is now in the fifth dimension. So it's like, and it's as you go up and up this chain, it just gets more complex and more complex.
Yeah. Right? And the math gets simpler and simpler. Which is bananas in the good way.
Yeah.
That's why we've even had the introduction of, like, higher dimensions is because, you know, when mathematicians and physicists are trying to, like, figure out, like, really complicated equations to simplify them, because that's what makes a beautiful equation is when it's really simple, like E equals MC squared. Like, that is just like, whoa, you're Einstein, because that is smart. And so scientists found out that if they added another dimension of, like space-time, basically, and I'm not a mathematician, so I really don't know how they, quote-unquote, did that. But I've read that by adding 9 dimensions, suddenly all of the really complicated equations collapse into those beautiful equations, such as E equals MC squared.
Which originally was M squared equals E over whatever.
Yeah. But, right. And then, you know, if math can help show that higher dimensions is not even a possibility but a probability, then yeah, like what Maria says, is that the realm of what we would refer to as God or like a creator? Like if here on this world that we're creating things with our hands, like manipulating atoms and
sure.
two-dimensional objects, simply because, like, that's just what we know to do, like, to be innovative and inventive and survive and thrive. Is there a being that's doing that with us? Like,
right.
are we someone's, like, sort of survival
yeah,
or even
right.
game?
Pets, I don't know.
Pets. God is a very weird topic
yeah.
to me.
In the book of Genesis, I just finished reading the book of Genesis, actually. And I'm reading it from a Christian Bible, but in the footnotes it says these texts were taken from ancient Sumerian texts and rewritten to fit a Christian narrative. And in that form, it has value,
mm-hmm.
right? But if you look at the original form, it doesn't say, God said, let there be light. It said, the gods said, let there be light. So when you were talking about, can your words create your reality?
Mm-hmm.
Well, these beings were essentially creating reality with their words. Yeah.
Well, this also leads into the conversation that we had on here of AI, artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, if you just deduce that down, you get to just I, which Chris was like getting me to realize that, and I'm like, oh yeah, it's just intelligence, like
yeah, what makes it artificial,
right? It's going to be the real thing, like so there's this argument out there, the simulation argument. Have you heard the simulation argument?
Basically we're in the Matrix.
Yeah, kind of like holographic universe, but basically more like, yeah, we're in the Matrix. Because here's what it is, like, so right now we have how long ago did we have like Pong?
Pong was a while ago.
Yeah.
I want to say 60s or 70s.
Right, so like first video game type era, a long time ago. And then think about telling someone who was playing Pong what the video games of today were going to be like. Right?
Describe a Skyrim type scenario.
Right.
They wouldn't, be able to imagine
it. You wouldn't even
it.
Be able to conceive it. And that's only been 40 whatever years.
Yeah.
Let me
mm-hmm.
just throw some numbers out there. So imagine what it's going to be like even, 50 years from now. What kind of virtual reality we're going to have. Well, the theory keeps extrapolating out. Like if you, let's say 500 years from now, if we don't nuke ourselves to death, or 1,000 years from now, there's a 0% chance that our simulations that you can decipher them from reality. They will be as real as reality.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you extrapolate on that and then you start thinking about all the possibility of life that's out there in the universe, like how many other humanoid type existences are there out there in the universe because of the multiplicity of stars and galaxies, that there's going to be all these civilizations creating these simulations of reality. So it's almost more likely, based on the math, that someone else has already created one of these super intelligences, and uh-huh. that super intelligence is simulating our reality, is actually more likely than what you described earlier, Maria, which is that we're possibly the first civilization in the whole universe. So that's a very low probability, right, that we were this unique. I mean, it could be. I agree. I mean, it very much could be. But it's almost more likely that we weren't the first. And if, and it, it's even more likely that someone else was the first to become this in AI, and then in I, the super intelligent civilization, and that we're just simulations.
Well, I mean, quantum mechanics, kind of like, or like the fact that we're starting to build like quantum computers, that's it right there. Because the word quanta refers to packet, and it's like packets of information. Because the cool thing about quantum mechanics, it's all probabilities. None of it is like super exact, because you can't know, you can only know partial information about this stuff. And
Getting into
the jargon of it, basically, we are depending on like probability, like almost like consciousness, observation,
information
to make the computation work, and therefore the simulation work. And so that's what you're saying, Chris, with like, it's not even artificial intelligence anymore at like the quantum level. If we're making quantum computers, that's like intelligence.
And I think that that's something that to me just like really like why quantum mechanics, physics, whatever you want to call it, right? Mm-hmm. Why that it's so interesting to me is because it sort of evolved from the hard science of A or B or black and white,
Newtonian.
Or yes or no, Newtonian, into this, well, maybe, you know, and yeah, sure, why not? It could be, right? And it becomes a little bit more of a science of philosophy, as I like to call it, because it talks about all of these things, right? Because saying that there's multiple dimensions is as crazy as the sounds, it still doesn't. And as crazy as it sounds that we are just maybe just a simulation, it really doesn't.
Right?
Yeah. Because it is probable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just goes to show you there's no, like, and the Tao Te Ching talks about this. The Tao Te Ching is a philosophical text from ancient China, from Lao Tzu, or a collection of people that all called themselves Lao Tzu, whatever. Highly recommend it, listeners, if you haven't read it. The Stephen Mitchell translation is my favorite because it's kind of like almost poetry. What was I going with that? Oh, the Tao Te Ching says that anything that is an absolute is actually an illusion. And all truths are paradoxes, is what the Tao Te Ching says.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And I think we've been having some type of telepathic connection this whole time. Because literally right when I'm thinking of something, you've been saying it. This happened at least four times.
Really?
Yeah, because I was going to say in the Taoism, in Buddhism, in Hinduism, they say if it's not the pure consciousness, the pure awareness, which is the absolute, everything is already illusion.
We're just quantumly entangled.
So isn't it?
But that doesn't make it less important, though.
Yeah.
No, but isn't it crazy then that all these philosophers and, you know, whatever, right, theologists or whatever you want to call them from like thousands of years ago already described what we are just now beginning to tap into scientifically?
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's actually really beautiful.
It's
beautiful.
For me, like, it shows that, organized religion has a lot of flaws, sure, but, like true spirituality, like, sitting in a true meditation, you know, has a lot of value to it, not simply for, like, calming myself down and, like, living my best life, but also, also, namaste. But also, like, the guys that did it thousands of years ago would meditate and do these, like, fire rituals and ceremonies and come to these amazing conclusions. Like that, like you said, we're just now, like finding out with harder science.
Well, think about if, I think I'm kind of jumping topics here.
It's okay.
Think about if you're sitting out in the middle of the ocean and you're observing, right? You have depth. If you look around in all directions, what do you see? Like if you're you're kind of an ancient explorer, you just
see in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah,
you see the ocean.
You just see the horizon in all directions,
yeah,
in a big circle around you, and you might be able, just from the circular shape, you might be able to deduce that you're on like a globe.
Yeah.
I bet some of them figured it out before.
Actually,
you know?
The world is round theory was widely accepted ever since the ancient Greeks, and only recently have some people started saying the earth is flat again.
Yeah.
But it's been around for thousands of years.
Oh my God.
this is just a pure nerd out comment. So then if you look out into the universe, like what do you, in all directions from as us now as observers with our telescopes, in all directions, what do you see in the furthest reaches, the very furthest, what do you see?
Stars.
It's actually beyond stars, beyond galaxies, you see the radiation, cosmic radiation.
Oh, yes.
From the Big Bang, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see this.
You can actually see this?
Right.
Yes.
You can actually
like astronauts?
Well, no. We have to have like an infrared telescope, right? So going back to the ocean, you look around in all directions and you see a big circle around you and you're on a globe.
Uh-huh.
But now we're looking out in all directions and there's the same thing in all directions. Well, so we exist in a four-dimensional hyperspace, you might say. And if we're in this four-dimensional space and we're looking out and we're seeing the same thing in all directions, so you were kind of on a three-dimensional space looking, you see the same thing. Oh, I'm in a globe.
Uh-huh.
Four-dimensional space, look out, see the same thing in all directions. Maybe we are floating on the surface of a five-dimensional hypersphere.
Whoa.
So, this makes me think of Interstellar a little bit, because...
have you guys seen the movie, Interstellar?
Yes, I have seen that.
It's a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
And have you guys read the book, The Signs of Interstellar?
No.
It's really cool, because it's the scientists that worked on the actual project. They approached him and said, hey, you know, we
Who's
got
him?
This... Kip Thorne.
The director?
No. Well, there
the
were
writer?
Many. One of the writers. There
oh,
were
okay.
many that went through. And it was like, hey, we really want to do this and like just kind of need a scientific perspective on black holes and time and traveling and blah, 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 blah. And he was like, cool, I will work on this. And it needs to be scientifically proven or is widely accepted by respected scientists. So... you know, it goes into, speaks about all sorts of things, right, this book. And one of the things that it talks about is that the five dimensions, which is, you know, you've got your regular three and four, which is time. And then the fifth one, which is, I think they call it the bulk.
The bulk?
Yes.
B-U-L-K?
Yes.
Oh,
and,
I
like it.
The bulk.
And that actually explains or... talks about what you brought up, Janan, a while ago about time and how it slows down, right? Which is essentially like, it's almost like all of the planets and all of space is sitting on jello, you know? And it's
like,
and it's like everything is like flat and it's even until there's the planet or a star, and then it kind of dips down, and depending on the weight and all of these other factors.
I look at it as like a rubber sheet, and like the planets and stars are like metal balls that sit on it and makes that like
the only problem is the sheet is actually
three-dimensional.
Like
yeah,
mind
so there's
mind.
Infinite sheets
yeah.
all
exactly.
around.
So there's all of these different things, right? And that idea is very difficult for us humans, for brains now to grasp upon this idea. And it talks about why, like, you know, because this gets into black holes, right? What is it?
Well,
because you can't see
our black
it, right?
holes,
like,
wormholes into other dimensions.
Well, it's difficult for us to understand first because we live in flat space-time, which
uh-huh.
is like boring
yeah.
space-time, which is and we kind of like
boring.
I'm so tired of this boring space-time.
We kind of take it for granted all that our time just ticks away in like a kind of a very predictable way.
Yeah.
Right. But I think when you start approaching a black hole, things get funky. So we have E
yeah.
equals MC squared, like I don't even know how to use this equation, but
energy
equals
mass times
right.
the speed of light squared.
And that those two have to equal, and I believe that principle is called conservation of energy. And
so both sides of the equation have to balance. Is that what you mean?
Right.
Yeah.
When, say, for instance, light gets sucked into a black hole, it's and that's when the Einsteins, the gravity and space-time theories start to precipitate. They don't work anymore. Like, it gets really funky, and you get into the physicists start to explore what's going on in the inside of a black hole, it's almost more like what we've been talking about, like the pure data and the projection of information. So there's a theory that all the information that goes into a black hole is actually projected back out to the cosmic horizon of the black hole, and that in a similar way we are holographic projections ourselves of data that's stored the data in the black hole is stored on the cosmic horizon and then projected, but our reality could be similar, like we're just these projections of information that's actually stored very, very far away. And that makes me think of us being in this computer simulation, right?
Yeah, we're just...
It's like physics.
Yeah.
Those two theories kind of like, for me, connect the whole like, we're being simulated by AI or intelligence.
What if black holes were sentient beings?
It could be.
Stoner thought 101.
Well, I mean, in the idea of black holes, like one of the things that I find interesting about them, aside from that, is that, like Junon says, right, light in time, you know, there is that correlation between the speed of light and how time is perceived based on that speed.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the cool things about time is that, like, forces, I don't even know what they're called, right? Like, the forces in the space, pull or gravity, pull you towards the time, wherever time is going to flow or be perceived, experienced the slowest, because it's this, like, survival type instinct. And in a black hole is where the pull is stronger.
Wait, so time would go faster?
Or so you're being
time
pulled
slows
towards...
down to like no time.
Yeah, because I've heard that when you get to the event horizon, which is the basically quote unquote surface of the hole of a black hole, time stops. Like that's what I've heard happens. If a human were to actually go there,
right.
You'd just be like, what? And then just be like frozen there.
Yeah.
But then I don't know what the observer would see, though.
The truth is, a human would actually be like shredded way before.
Yeah.
We get it.
I mean, yes. So could you assume or hypothesize, theorize that maybe a higher civilization has already evolved past time and it can survive timeless within a black hole?
Well, yeah, they're called black holes.
What about that?
I mean, who knows? I don't know. No one knows what's going on.
No one knows.
So. You want to know something interesting about gravity that like just really blew my mind when Marie was mentioning the whole sitting on Jell-O thing? So at first I could not picture it, right? Because it's like trying to picture these like different four-dimensional models of things just don't work in my brain. But after a few years of trying to picture it, I've gotten really comfortable about like seeing it in my brain. So gravity, like in all the equations that describe gravity, it used to be known as this mysterious force that would like pull things in from a distance, which didn't make any sense because like there's no like string pulling something in. Like there's no string pulling the moon to the earth. It was just like gravity was like basically a magic power. Like, I'm pulling you closer.
Yeah.
And that's how gravity was thought of for a while. And then as we've gotten better at math and physics as humans, what it's come to realize is the equations that describe gravity are simply describing the physics of a fourth dimension. Because the way that the, like Maria said, like Jell-O, I see it as a rubber sheet, and then like all the planets in our solar system, let's say, we've got the sun, then we got our Earth and Mars and Venus and all that, they're like metal balls, so when they sit on this rubber sheet, they make an indentation, okay? And just for now, imagine it just as a two-dimensional thing, just one rubber sheet, and then I put a little metal ball next to the Earth, That's the moon. And because, have you ever like put a coin in one of those things for charity where it has got a hole in the middle and you put the coin in and it goes all around the side, but it takes forever? So it's just a giant one of those. Basically, the indentation that Earth makes in space-time is simply the moon like falling toward that incline. It's simply like the physics of an incline because it's such on a huge scale, it just keeps going and there's like barely any friction and all that kind of stuff. It just keeps going around and around and around. Now imagine that rubber sheet, not just horizontally, but vertically and 45 degrees and 65 degrees and then all the degrees it can possibly be.
Right.
And that's how our space is. So gravity is actually simply describing the physics of things falling toward each other.
Certainly
because they're indenting actually like space-time. And time, although we experience it as like a when, it's actually a what. Discuss.
Right,
yeah.
Discuss.
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, it goes back to kind of the dimensions. And if you look in the fourth dimension, you see that my life, Emma, or all of us were these long snakes, but the only way our mind can perceive things, I really believe, is actually in three dimensions. Like, so if I step myself back to that observation, that fourth dimensional observation point, and I do see my life as this long string or existence, then I'm just seeing an object like you're describing. It's just I'm seeing a three-dimensional object, but I'm observing it from, you would say, the fourth dimension. If there is a being that can see that, that being exists in the fourth dimension, that being's time would be what dimension?
Yeah, it wouldn't even be an everything would be happening all at once.
Well, that being's, sure, for us, but that being his or her degree of freedom would be in the fifth dimension. So its experience of time would just be this other physical dimension that is the bulk. Right. So, I mean, I think the other thing is that when you get to that level, it's no longer past, present, or future.
Uh-uh.
It's just one present.
One thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's no longer like this thing, event's going to happen after this event, because with relativity and things are moving at the speed of light, you can't really always tell which thing happened first.
Yeah, there's no such thing as cause and effect.
Right.
It breaks down at that point.
Like you said, they put the atomic clock into space, and let's say there had been a person on that, and it's traveling the speed of light, it's going to perceive time slower, as that person's going to come back and be 25, but we're all going to be 55.
Yeah.
Right. Well, what happened is not that that person time traveled as much as that that person just experienced if you look back at that outside observer perspective, the outside observer doesn't see a problem with that. The outside observer just sees events being caused by other events.
Yeah.
It gets down to that's the only thing that really exists, is not necessarily when things happened, but what caused things to happen is what does substantially exist, which physicists refer to as causality.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So there's really no time. There's only causality.
Yeah. Wow. And that, I mean, how that's actually affected my life, like real, like out in the world, because I love just thinking about this stuff, but also like, you know, I'll go into, like something will happen and I'll get really like bummed out and be like, oh, you know, because this happened, then I'm feeling this way. And I'll get like in a really cause and effect kind of mood. And then like even start thinking like, well, if I don't get my master's degree, then this is going to happen. And so when I start like living like a cause and effect kind of life, I get myself all wrapped up in illusion. I get wrapped up in like straight up illusion, like really thinking that, you know, like time isn't malleable when it really is. And so anyway, I think
from our perspective though, it is as we're kind of trapped in our flat space time.
Yes.
So from our perspective, it's almost like the argument exists both ways.
It does.
Like you could say,
because like it does
time
happen.
Does exist for us.
Like if I smash my toe with a hammer, I'm going to go, wow, like there's not anything to say that's not going to happen. You know what I mean? There's like a cause and effect, but there's a duality to it that is a paradox, going back to the Tao Te Ching, and that it's in that paradox where like all that truth happens. So as a human, I found myself when I get like too bogged down in like one half. That's when I know I need to like, oh, actually, if I just shift my perspective on what's happening and realize that like the past doesn't necessarily dictate what's going to happen next, then I can break
free from that cycle
and like live a...
From a physics perspective, it doesn't.
Yeah, so I can live a better life.
You've got infinite choices.
Like not only is it just like, oh, motivational and empowering, but like it's actually true.
And that's the blessing and curse of being a human because we're kind of trapped in this, you know, with time, we get the experience of discovery, you know, whereas if you're outside of that, everything is kind of already known.
Yeah.
The future already exists.
Yeah. And we get the experience of duality. Some people may see that as something negative, but there's something very poetic and beautiful about duality, about being separate and then rejoining and then separating again and rejoining as that rhythm of life.
I love that. I love how you said the experience of discovery. Because that's something that like an all-knowing being wouldn't have, because it knows everything already.
Right.
So could you argue that our nature, because we as species, we're very curious, right? We like to discover things. We like to touch things and, oh my God, it's hot, just kidding, never doing that again, you know? And there's a lot of that throughout history and throughout our evolution that has led to the discoveries of this technologies. Could you argue that the reason why that's in our nature is because we're also sort of wired to experience time the way we do it?
Absolutely. Sorry.
You're good.
I think that's exactly where it comes from. You know? It's in our nature. It's like every human that's born, regardless of where you are on the earth, regardless if you're in a society or some type of tribe, we all have that curiosity and that discovery process and learning and everything like that. So,
by the way, I want to get to some of our listener questions because we've actually touched on a lot of them already.
All right, that is the end of the first part of this episode. If you want to listen to the rest of the episode, just click on over to the next one. Blanket Ninja.